Welcome to Ancient Future Faith with Dr. Chris Alford, pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento. Just what is ancient future Christian faith? Join Chris each week as he talks with special guests about a refreshing renewal in evangelical worship and spirituality that's helping many believers get in touch with their ancient Christian heritage. Now, with another look at how the road to the evangelical future runs through the ancient past, here's Dr. Chris Alford.
Well, hi, folks, and welcome back to another edition of Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford, and I'm the host of the program and also the pastor of Epiclesis, an ancient future faith community in Sacramento, California. As always, I love to direct people over to our website. It's full of terrific information all about the church, and best of all, we'd love to have you worship with us in person. We meet on Sunday mornings at 10:30 in the Carmichael area. You can find all the information at the aforementioned website. That's epiclesis.org, E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org. Each week on this program, we love to bring you special guests, and one of my favorite of all guests is my good buddy, Dr. Carl Peters. He's calling in today from Lexington, Kentucky, and Carl, it's good to have you, and are you over your jet lag yet?
I'm still a touch groggy, but it's been a week since we returned from the Holy Land, so I'm just about back to normal.
Well, I had 10 hours to regain or somehow reacclimatize myself to. You had, what, 5 or something like that? Any way you slice it, going to Israel, it's tough on the old body clock, but Carl, worth every bit of it, yes?
What a glorious time we had, and Chris, I would go back next week.
I think I would too. Although I need to rest up a little bit. Carl, we should remind people that shortly before we went on our roughly 2-week trip to Israel, that several of us in the Epiclesis community, also some friends and family from the East Coast, we promised folks that we would give a little report. And I don't think that just one report is going to be enough, because we really did taste and see how gracious the Lord is in so many different ways. So I'm thinking we're going to need to unpack several times what we experienced and smelled and ate and touched the time we were there. Yeah, do you agree?
I totally agree. There's just too much. And every day we were there, we did so many things and saw so many of the biblical places that we grew up learning about. It was just a packed itinerary, and there's no way we can share it in 23 or 4 minutes.
No, that's for sure. So let's already agree that we will do this another few times before we turn the page on this particular trip. You said, though, a minute ago you'd go back next week, and I know you're only half kidding. I would, too, I think. But I've already begun talking, and you well know this, about the possibility of returning in about 2 years, maybe a slightly different trip where we might spend more time in Jerusalem. But there's just something about going to the Holy Land, the place where Jesus walked, where he talked, where he did his ministry, where he healed, where he revealed himself as Messiah, that makes you want to go back again, doesn't it? I mean, it's almost like an irresistible urge or tug at your heart to go back.
It's an amazing sense of nearness to the Lord. I know he's always with us and promised to never leave us, but there's just a special sense of that when you walk the streets where he walked. And Chris, I was just reflecting in my mind about going to Capernaum, and I was reading in the scriptures as Jesus began his ministry, it said he went to Capernaum, and that became his base of operations for the ministry around Galilee. Well, much of that old city has been uncovered. And the archaeologists have revealed to us the very streets where Jesus walked.
Yeah.
Peter's house is even, they think they know where he lived. And the synagogue there where Jesus taught is underneath a synagogue that was built later. I mean, these are the stories we've heard since we were little kids in vacation Bible school. And they came to life before our very eyes as we visited from the very south point in Israel all the way to the north and Dan. We covered so much of Israel and had a marvelous time learning so many things, seeing so many things that reinforce what we have learned over the years.
I think one of the good things about this trip was also, in some ways, maybe one of its weaknesses. We really wanted to pack a lot in. And so the days were just filled to the brim with stuff to do and places to go. I guess the flip side or the downside of that is that your mind just starts to overload, doesn't it? I think I mentioned at one point during the trip that my hard drive was full. I didn't think I could take
yeah.
I didn't think I could take anything else in.
There's only so much bandwidth to take in during a day, and we absolutely filled up our days with wonderful experiences and I don't know how to unpack it all, even in this radio show. It's almost overwhelming as I think back on the experiences we had from Ein Gedi at the very beginning, where we saw where David, the strongholds of Ein Gedi is where David fled when Saul was pursuing him. And we saw caves all along where David may have stayed, and we saw the beautiful springs there. I think Ein Gedi means the goat spring. And in this desert wasteland is this beautiful spring, this beautiful waterfall into a little pool. And I can't help but think that David may have received sustenance and refreshing there in that little pool. Those are the kinds of things that, as I look back on it, they just overwhelm me.
Folks, you're listening to a radio program called Ancient Future Faith. My name is Chris Alford. I'm the pastor of the church, Epiclesis, right here in Sacramento, California. And on the radio today is my good buddy, Dr. Carl Peters. He's the pastor of Anchor Baptist Church in Lexington, Kentucky. And today we're talking about what was an amazing experience for us and 27 other folks who went with us to Israel over the last couple of weeks. Carl, I had a topic on my mind for this particular radio broadcast that I think might help us organize our thoughts, and that is the notion of geography revealing or disclosing theology. And I had this quote in mind. It was Jerome, St. Jerome, mid-4th to the early 5th century, who said, "There are five gospels that record the life of Jesus. Four you will find in books, and the one you will find in the land they call holy. Read the fifth gospel, and the world of the four will open to you." In other words, the land itself, there's something about the land and the geography that discloses the story of God. And I kind of thought we might talk a little bit about that particular aspect of the trip. Would that be okay?
Absolutely. And Chris, may I just point out that for those of you who are in the Sacramento area, I know Chris is planning on preaching on these very things over the next few Sundays, and I would encourage you to worship with the Epiclesis crowd if you want to hear Chris unpack these things live and in worship as he shares from the Word of God. But Chris, I look forward to this, and I agree with Jerome. I think the Bible just was wide open to us in those deserts and in Jerusalem and everywhere we went. It was as if we were living out in our minds and in our experience those Bible stories that we've grown to love.
Well, let me start with a bird's eye kind of look over the whole trip. So just to get it in folks' mind, we spent about 2 weeks in the Holy Land. Part of that was a day trip over into Jordan, which is also part of the Holy Land. As we know, that desert wasteland over there is where the children of Israel would have wandered during their 40 years. It is the traditional place where water sprang from the rock. It's the traditional place where Moses buried Aaron, etc. But for the most part, we were in the country of Israel. And we started at the Dead Sea area. We flew into Tel Aviv, but then went straight away to the Dead Sea. So there's the lowest place on earth. And I remember our ears popping as we descend and descend and descend. Carl, you and I got to float around a little bit in the Dead Sea. And then from there, we go south through the desert. And what an impact that has all the way to the Red Sea, where Moses and the children of Israel cross over as they are escaping Pharaoh, and God is delivering them from their bondage in Egypt. From there, over briefly to Jordan, and then back north to the Galilee, where Jesus did most of his ministry. And there's something about the geography there that I want us to at least touch on. I hope we have time for that. We went up to the Golan Heights. We descended back down. We went over to the coast to see Caesarea. We also, by the way, went up to Caesarea Philippi and Dan, as you mentioned earlier. And then we ended our trip, and I think it was really smart the way that the folks put together this trip. We end in this wonderful culminating event of going up, and it is actually going up to Jerusalem, sort of as the capstone. As I just brush out those broad strokes, Carl, about basic geography, what comes to mind as you're thinking about those steps that we took? And what kind of theological themes begin to percolate up for you?
Well, it's theological, it's ontological, it's soteriological. At the Dead Sea, I think about how nothing was living there. And you said that you and I were messing around in the water. You can't mess around too much, because if you get that stuff in your eyes, it's just a killer.
It's painful.
But you and I were both bobbing up and down in the water. It's just amazing how buoyant it is. But that's because of the chemicals in the water, and nothing is alive there. And it makes me think of Ephesians 2 and the state of man, that we are dead in our trespasses and sins. There's nothing alive necessarily within us spiritually. Then we move down to the Red Sea and Eilat there, where the children of Israel perhaps crossed through the Red Sea. I think of being delivered from bondage to Satan and sin and death. And for the Israelites, it was to Pharaoh. But for us, spiritually speaking, we come from this death of the Dead Sea, perhaps through the Red Sea, to a new life, a new journey with the Lord. And then I think about the Sea of Galilee, which is so full of life. You may remember the disciples were casting nets and pulling in more fish than they could possibly get in the boat. So full of life. And that's where Jesus called them to a very specific ministry as his disciples, called those four fishermen. I just think of the beautiful parallel of spirituality that we find in the Holy Land, the very thing that Jerome and that you were talking about just a few moments ago.
When you said full of life, I'm thinking about that really surprising event when we recounted and renewed our baptismal vows. Several folks did that, and there were little fish. You remember, I'm sure, there are little fish nibbling on our toes, and there was a crab crawling near me, which actually was a bit alarming at one point. I had to maintain my composure. And then even some big fish. You really think about how all of that life is there, teeming with life, and then, of course, it flows into the Dead Sea.
I may be a bit sentimental, but when we visited the place on the Jordan River where it's believed that Jesus was baptized, where Elijah was taken up, where John baptized Jesus, and it's also the place where tradition holds that Israel crossed over into the Promised Land. You may remember that the water parted there, and the Ark of the Covenant was carried over, and so forth. That very place, it's the same basic location where all of that was supposed to have happened, and we took a visit there, and I was so moved. Perhaps like no other place, I was moved there. And I remember dipping my little bottle into the water to take some of the water with me. And as I did that, a little fish swam up to my bottle.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, the fish is the symbol of early Christianity.
That's right.
And here the Lord has given me the grace of seeing a little fish there, new life there in the water. And as I turned around, I looked up, and there were two soldiers with their machine guns. And the thought of the hatefulness of mankind, the very need for that. I mean, Israel is constantly under pressure from nations all around them that they have to be secure, and their army is very efficient and very strong for that very reason. It occurs to me that because of the fallenness of man and the brokenness of man, we have to have military men and women. And I turned around from looking at that new life expressed in the little fish there in those waters of the Jordan, those baptismal waters, to see sort of the picture of death and the evil and the fallenness of man. And that's the very thing that we leave there in the baptismal waters.
Well said. I had not put those two images together quite like that. It's so much a picture, or as Dr. Carla Waterman would say, the code of our life as believers, this baptismal picture. Think about John preaching out in the desert, and boy, did we see a lot of desert. And then coming to the Jordan, where it says all the people came out to be baptized, and that river teeming with life. And thinking about, here's the theological truth that comes out of that, that we daily die to self, we die to the desert that is in us, and we rise up having been refreshed in the waters of baptism as we daily walk out our baptisms.
Beautiful.
You're listening to a program called Ancient Future Faith with Chris Alford. That's me. I'm the host and the pastor of Epiclesis, an Ancient Future Faith church in Sacramento. As always, you can zip over to the website, epiclesis.org, E-P-I-C-L-E-S-I-S.org, and learn more. On the phone today is my good buddy, Dr. Carl Peters. We're talking about geography as theology. How in the world does that even work? Well, we've just spent 2 weeks in Israel. And in our remaining moments, I hope we can talk a little bit about the Galilee and then going up to Jerusalem. Carl, well, I'm going to ask you first, and then I'm going to tell you what surprised me about the Sea of Galilee and the little towns along the shore. But what surprised you, if anything, about that location and specifically its geography?
Well, I'll tell you tell you what I'd like to do, Chris, if I may. I want to talk about Dan and Caesarea Philippi for just a moment, if you'll forgive me. Something that is just pressing on me, and I feel like I need to share it. There's an old town called Dan, and it's where the tribe of Dan, actually, it was where they went, sort of turning their back on what God had designed for them. He wanted them to be more toward the Tel Aviv area on the coast. That was the inheritance that God had prescribed for them, but they didn't follow God's plan. They went up into the mountainous area and established their city there, their place there, a place called Dan. And what's sad is they not only worship Yahweh, they also worship the pagan god or gods there.
Yes.
They compromised with the people, the pagans around them. And so God was not, he did not turn a blind eye to that and judge them for that. Then we went to Caesarea Philippi.
Right.
This theme of pagan worship and syncretism and allowing the world to creep in sort of appears again as Jesus stood there, took his disciples to Caesarea Philippi.
On purpose.
There's a beautiful rock formation there where not only was the god Pan worship there, and when the spring came out of that mountain and fed the Banya, I believe it is the river, one of the three that goes into the Jordan, into Galilee and the Jordan.
Yes,
there they would sacrifice their children to this pagan god Pan, and there were other gods worshipped there. So Jesus takes his disciples to this huge rock formation with this spring, and there he asks them, "Who do you say that I am?" And they say, "The people say you're a prophet," and so on. But Peter says, "No, you are the Christ. You are the Son of the living God." And Jesus said, "You know, Peter, you don't know this because of your own ingenuity. It is God himself who's revealed this to you." And then he changes Peter's name. He says, "You're no longer Simon. You're Peter. And upon this rock I will build my church. And the gates of hell will not prevail against it." Well, that opening to the rock there was known as the gates of hell. And so all of this is coming together for me as we're sharing in this visit to Caesarea Philippi. At the very place where pagan worship had become commonplace, well, here Jesus is turning what is all wrong, he's turning it right side up.
Yeah.
He's saying, "I'm going to establish with you, Peter, and with the disciples, I'm going to use you as my instruments to build the church. And it's through the church that right worship, worship in spirit and truth, will set things aright." And that theme rang out to me so beautifully in our visits to Dan and to Caesarea Philippi.
You have to see the geography of the place, in my opinion, to really get this. But sometimes before I went to Israel, and especially when I was younger, I sort of got the impression that Jesus and his disciples are kind of bumming along, you know, and come upon these places haphazardly. Because of the geography and because of how it is that you must go in order to get there, it's really evident that Jesus goes to Caesarea Philippi on purpose. It's a field trip. He's taking the disciples there for a very purposeful object lesson, as it were, which leads me to the other thing I was going to say just briefly about the Galilee area. These little towns along the Sea of Galilee, and for California listeners, the Sea of Galilee is what, roughly 25% or a third of Lake Tahoe. So it's not a large thing at all, although it would have had more surface area probably at the time of Jesus. These little towns are very close together, and that helps me when I'm reading these stories visualize how easy it would have been for word to go from place to place of where they could find Jesus, and really makes those parts of the gospel come alive. I remember standing on the rock where is the traditional location that Jesus, after the resurrection, had some fish cooking for the disciples and calls out to them, and it's just a short little jaunt over to the water. "Have you caught any fish today?" And you can just sort of see how in your own life, Jesus shows up in the most familiar yet also most unusual times to ask questions like that and then provide for us in a way we could not have imagined. That particular stop meant a lot to me.
Yes, indeed. It was a beautiful, picturesque place, and you could imagine very easily that scene taking place right there. The church that they have built has preserved that rock where Jesus was preparing the fish, and then they show the spot just outside the church where they believe Jesus was standing when he called out to the disciples. And it's a very, very precious little place to visit where Jesus reinstated Peter. Do you love me? Feed my sheep. Do you love me? Tend my sheep. Feed my flock. What a beautiful, beautiful place and a beautiful message from Jesus, asking if they had caught any fish. That's what he had called them to do, to make them fishers of men. And then to realize that even Peter, this one who Jesus elevated to such a grand status, perhaps the preeminent apostle, had failed Jesus, denied him three times, and yet Jesus didn't give up on Peter. He reinstated him, and it was at that very place. A beautiful reminder to all of us that even though we fail at times, even though we may even, by our actions or what we don't do, we may deny our faith, the Lord still loves us and wants to reinstate us and then elevate us again to use us for his kingdom's purposes.
Speaking of elevation, that's another geographical thing that just popped out at me. We have about a minute left, Carl, and obviously we'll have to have another radio conversation to talk about these things. But our last stop was going up, actually elevating, going up in elevation all the way to the holy city of Jerusalem. And how packed is that with theological truth for us as disciples of Jesus?
They really were songs of ascent, weren't they?
Yeah. I'll tell you where my mind went, actually, was not necessarily going up to Jerusalem, but down to Emmaus. Our final evening was a wonderful meal in the town of Abu Ghosh, which is, my understanding, near the area where Emmaus was located. And I think about the long trip down the hill that we took in the bus, you know, 6 or 7 or more miles outside of Jerusalem, and how Jesus walked along with those precious disciples after the resurrection. And they saw him and they recognized him in the breaking of the bread. And it says they returned at once to Jerusalem. And we read that and think, okay, that's nice. But they didn't take a bus back, Carl, did they?
No, they would have hoofed it back up the hill 7 miles or so. And how they were propelled from that experience with Jesus, knowing him in the breaking of the bread, their hearts burned within them while he opened the word to them. What if our worship concluded that way and our people, you know, ran to tell people what they had experienced in their time with Jesus in worship? That is such a wonderful story. And Chris, I am so pleased that you and I both love that story with all of our hearts. And so to have that experience at the end of our trip was surely a blessing.
Well, thank you, Carl, for being a part of this program. It's always nifty to have you with us, and we're going to have to take several more broadcasts to unpack this. But, folks, the point of this one is that there's something about geography that can disclose theology, or at least give us some ideas about what it is to live the Christ life and to be a disciple of the Lord Jesus. Carl, will you come back and we can talk some more another time?
Well, I think we've left a lot unsaid, haven't we?
We have. And I always enjoy reminiscing and unpacking all of these kinds of things with you, Carl. Thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris.
Folks, you've been listening to another episode of Ancient Future Faith. And I want to remind you, until we gather again, to be thinking about this truth. Surely, the road to our evangelical future runs through our ancient Christian past. Until next time, the Lord be with you.
Thank you for joining us for another look at Ancient Future Faith. There is a refreshing wind of renewal blowing through the Evangelical Church as more and more worshipers turn for inspiration to the rich language and pattern of the ancient church, and they're rediscovering classic Christianity and learning to draw strength from a deep well of time-tested truth and tradition. Want to experience Ancient Future Faith for yourself? Join us for worship at Epiclesis in Sacramento on Sunday mornings at 10:30 a.m. in the chapel at 4600 Winding Way. You can contact us by calling 916-572-9113 or online at epiclesis.org. That's 916-572-9113 or on the web at epiclesis.org.
Hi folks, it's Pastor Chris with one more word before we sign off. The long season after Pentecost is the perfect time to experience worship at Epiclesis, or maybe jump into a small group. There's always something happening at Epiclesis, and we'd love to have you be a part of it. Think about joining us for worship this summer. You'll be warmly welcome.
As always, find more information on the web at epiclesis.org. That's EPICLESIS.org. The Lord be with you, and see you next Monday afternoon at 4 p.m. for another edition of Ancient Future Faith.